Hello, and welcome to Required Reading, the podcast that revisits the most impactful books from our childhood. I'm your host, Erin Bowles. I am a writer, actor, and comedian, and today's episode is a little different, but we have returning guest, Jenny Cavallaro. Jenny is a disabled writer, comedian, and librarian in Washington, D.C. They host a monthly sober comedy show called Seltzer and write for the disability humor site, The Squeaky Wheel. She only started really reading books again like 8 months ago, and guess what? Reading is great. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Erin. You got a custom bio for today because books.
Yeah, I love it. I'm thinking about, in the beginning of episodes, asking, what are you reading these days? First time.
This is a trend-setting episode. I love it. I am reading a lot of romance novels, so our book today fits right into that genre. As I mentioned to you, I have only recently gotten back into reading regularly, and I've read 37 books this year already, which outpaces any record of mine in life. And it's been very enjoyable. Just a little escaping into happy places where people are loved.
Yeah, that's really nice. Yeah.
What about you?
I am currently reading Sula by Toni Morrison. It's only the second Toni Morrison book I've read, which the first was Required Reading. I read Beloved right as 10th grade started, and it blew my mind.
That's a very formative time to read read that book, especially.
Yeah.
That's lovely. Yeah, you read a lot more literary fiction, I think, than I do these days.
I think it's because I have started looking at like my book collection differently and like the way I consume books. I have so many books. There's so many little free libraries in my area that I'm just amassing them at a alarming rate. So I decided to have one little shelf that's like the up next shelf. And so it's a couple authors that I've at the same time decided like these are my go-tos of like if I see one of their books and it's one that I don't have, go for it, buy it, bring it in. And so Toni Morrison is one of those authors, and it's making me and then it's like the most recent like five or six that I've picked up, so that like I'm more just aware of what I have. And so I'm working through, like, I just read one of Joan Didion's books because she's on that list. I just read an Isabel Allende book because she's on that list. I'm also picking, like, the shortest ones first, so that's really helping.
Yeah, you want to give yourself a challenge that you're still going to be able to achieve, right? Yeah. I like that. I like having the shelf because the TBR pile, read pile, can be overwhelming. And I work in a library, and I also live very close to a bookstore. Mm-hmm. So I often am surrounded by choices, and it can be very hard.
It is. Why
I like podcasts like this too, which I get homework and then I'm a good student. So I read the book.
Me too. I love that. So today's episode is different because it's what I'm going to call a dealer's choice episode, where I pick the book.
Is this the first one?
Yes. And this is also, I didn't realize it when we recorded, this is our 31st episode. I forgot about the 30th, but this is our 31st episode.
That feels really impactful because 30, you're still figuring things out. 31, you have it down. You
are. It's true.
In your 30s, episode-wise. So I think this means that 31 for you will be a very impactful year.
We got a little ways to go. Yeah.
Be on the lookout. Just keep it in the back of your mind so you have time to get ready.
Sure. Although I love that because 31 is 5 years away from me now, and the first episode you did with me was our 5th episode.
Okay, this is some Taylor Swift numbers, like, happening right now.
Synergy, yeah.
Beautiful. Sevens and eights come up a lot in my life, so if anything comes up, we will see. But this is about you right now, and I'm very pleased that this is all coming together. Wow, it was episode 5. That's so many episodes, Erin. I'm so proud of you and impressed.
Thank you. I was on the phone with my manager yesterday and said, you know, episode 30 is about to drop. And he goes, oh my God, buy yourself a cake. And maybe I will. We'll see what's at the store. Since moving to LA, I've really become obsessed with Tres Leches cake. Oh.
That sounds really good, although it's very humid in DC today where I live, and so the idea of having just a lot of dairy sounds bad, but I would do it for Tres Leches.
Yeah. The first time I ever had Tres Leches was like such a cinematic night because I was living in South LA. I was in a duplex, my boyfriend and I in one unit, and the other unit was this family of four with a kid, a daughter who was five and a boy who was three. And they were hilarious characters. And it was the little boy's birthday, I think, Guapo, which Guapo. Of course I don't want to like put their real names out on the internet, but he goes by Guapo, so I will call him Guapo.
That is his chosen name, and that is how we will refer to him.
And they were having Tres Leches cake, and they were like, do you want a slice? Do you and your boyfriend want a slice? And the neighborhood we lived in always had fireworks, so we were in the big backyard eating cake, watching fireworks.
Wow. Yeah. Imagine if you were studying abroad in California and that was your first night in America. You'd be like, oh, this is just what it's like. Okay. I'm from Belgium. We don't have fireworks and Tres Leches cake on a Tuesday.
Wild.
Welcome to LA.
Exactly. Living in South LA was such a... Oh, by the way, I just got a kitten.
Oh, this is the little ghostly beast. What? Oh my gosh. Whoa. That was resonant. That I could feel that purr, like all
she's
the way
loud
to my chest. Wow, what is her name?
Her name is Bear.
Bear. I thought I saw a bear on my drive home, but it was just a very large dog.
Okay. It's not unheard. Stop it. Her favorite thing in the world is to sit on a keyboard.
It's mine too, actually. I'm holding back right now. I think the reason I thought I saw a bear was because there was just a story, and this is actually very sad. They found a dead bear in DC in a trash bag.
Oh my God.
I know. And it was like not small, I don't think. It was sizable, and someone just found it in a park, and I think they're still trying to figure out where it came from. But
oh my gosh.
I had bears on the brain.
Yeah.
And now I have bears on my screen because Tiny Bear the cat just purred right to my heart.
I'm glad we got that.
Gorgeous.
Today's book is what I have always said is my required reading of, like, if I were a guest, this is what I would do. This is my book. Is Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist by Rachel Cohn and David Levithan.
And I did not know that when I selected... you had a list and you said, will someone do one of these books?
Yeah.
And I said, oh yeah, I would love to. And I chose this book because I hadn't read it before.
Oh.
And yay. I saw the movie when it came out and I remembered liking it and I thought that could be fun, but now I feel a lot of pressure.
don't
feedback because, well, we'll just get into it, but okay. Required reading. So this book came out in 2006, right?
Yes.
Are you getting background?
I did very little, but it did come out in 2006 and the movie came out in 2008. I think I might have found it that year, maybe the year after, but I think it had the same trajectory for me as Bridge to Terabithia, where the movie was coming out and I was going to read the book first so that I could pass judgment on the movie.
Honestly, it's good you read Bridge to Terabithia first, because if you walked into that movie cold...
Yes.
Ooh, much different vibe from this book, we'll
say. Oh, yeah.
Everyone, spoiler alert, makes it out alive. Of this
yes.
book.
Yeah, Bridge to Terabithia, I read, and I was like, I am not going to see this movie. Absolutely not.
Was that Josh Hunger Games?
Yeah, Josh Hutcherson. Good Kentucky boy. Yeah.
Kentucky, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Although Bridge to Terabithia is written by a woman and based on a real story and is set right outside DC.
Shut up. I also saw that Rachel Cohn grew up outside of DC.
Yeah, she grew up, I think, in the same county as me. Rachel Cohn wrote, I think, episode 7's book, which was Pop Princess with Lizzie Logan, which was very Britney era.
Wait, so how old were you in 2006?
In 2006, I would have been 8.
Okay. So, wow, you read this, like, pretty young.
Around 10 or 11. And I remember just, like, this book was always in my backpack in middle school to the point where, like, I have my copy, which is the movie tie-in copy. Which
That's your original copy?
Mm-hmm. Because it does have the photo insert, middle pages. And then the second half is completely detached.
Wow. I actually got my book from the library, and it is a first edition.
Wow.
It is still on the shelf. It even has on the back, from when we used to stamp books, Aww. It has some of the due date stamps on the back. So this book, I checked too, because I do work at the library. This book has been checked out 23 times. I am the 23rd. Nobody likes it when you're 23, but they do like it when you read the 23rd time of this book.
Yeah.
So this is like, this is a well printed book because it is held up over many years. So excellent job, publisher of this book, for the excellent binding. And it's a slim book.
Oh yeah, I think 180 pages is my version. 183.
I read most of it in one sitting because it's very quick.
It is. I really like to pace things out and do the smallest amount possible each day for any task. So I read two chapters each day, which was really nice because all of the odd numbered chapters are from Nick's perspective, written by David Levithan, and all of the even chapters are from Nora's perspective, written by Rachel Cohn. And I know Rachel Cohn, from researching that other episode, she got the idea for it walking through, I think, Central Park. And found David Levithan. I think they probably like knew each other in the same circles. David Levithan, I read at least one of his other books. He seemed like a very, like a year before John Green, and less cultural impact, but very big. And also very big because I think he was writing some of the first like queer stories I ever read.
Yeah, I think it was Boy Meets Boy. I remember reading that. And he I had read before. I had never read Rachel Cohn. I like that it reads like, you know, they obviously have a close friendship, so they're able to write these characters like from a distinct point of view for each one, but like they're having a conversation with each other in a way that works really well. I'm curious because at 10 or 11, this book gets a little spicy for
it. Does
YA. It gets a little spicy. Not, and I'm not against spice, but I'm curious, at 10 or 11, was that shocking to you? Had you read books like that before?
I hadn't. And I didn't read a lot, especially in high school, other than what was assigned. Doing homework actually took up a lot of time, surprisingly.
Yeah. I mean, that's honestly why I didn't read for pleasure for a long time, because I was an English major, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had a lot to read, and then I was just, like, burnt out on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This was, to me, this book was so much of middle school, and this book was, like, the moment of, like, I'm a teen. I have arrived. I'm here. You know, there's a page that is just the word fuck almost the entire page. And that was like, I have like not something people say a lot in this podcast is like having a book feel like hidden knowledge, stumbling upon something great. And I don't know if I thought it was that, but I did feel like I had a secret like in my backpack. And I would be like, nobody on this bus knows what I'm reading.
And they say fuck a lot in this
they
book.
Do.
So after I finished it, I looked it up on Goodreads because I was just curious, like, what other people thought about it. And because this book came out, what, 18 years ago?
Yeah, I think exactly.
There's reviews from a long period of time, like people finding it recently, people reading it when it came out or after they saw the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And something a lot of people remarked on, whether they liked it or didn't, was how much they say fuck in this book. And people were not a fan of that. And I have to say, I must just think in the word fuck a lot, because I did not even clock that they were doing it a lot.
I did not either. Except for that one page, which I have always remembered as like a detail, a talking point about it.
I think that's just like how a lot of people's inner monologues are. And it wasn't that they were saying it every other word. They were thinking it a lot. And when I looked back, I was like, oh, yeah, I think if you counted like the fuck real estate in this book, there would be quite proportionally it is a lot, but it felt natural to me because the context.
Oh, yeah. I remember cursing very heavily in 11th grade and 5th grade. Because I think fifth grade, it's a classic story my dad loves to tell. But once when I was in fifth grade, he like dropped something and cursed, and he goes, "Oh, I'm sorry, Aaron." And I go, "Like, Dad, I know what curse words are. I ride the bus." So I do remember, like, for some reason, pacing the playground in fifth grade, being very grouchy, cursing a lot.
I mean, what a dream, right? What else are you going to do as a fifth grader? Also, the bus is where I think where we all learn our best swear words, and where there's just a lot of good hair braiding techniques happening as well. Picked up the swears, not so much the hair braiding, but...
I also like that we've talked about the movie, because to me, the movie was a huge disappointment. It's very different.
It's very different.
Yeah. As like a screenwriter, I completely understand the changes that they made, because this book is so internal, which I think is one of the reasons that it works so well. But really just wandering around New York City, and a movie really benefits from a plot. And the plot is, we got to go find Caroline, Nora's best friend. And in the book, they're like, we put her in a van and she's fine. And it's chapter four. Like, exactly.
Yes. I saw the movie when it came out, and I remember Caroline very distinctly, because she is very much the comedic character in it, played by Ari Grainer, and is fantastically funny.
Mm-hmm.
And in the movie, she gets, you know, in the book too, she gets like super drunk, and this is like her behavior is to get super drunk, and Nora has to take care of her. But instead, Nora kind of puts her in a van and arranges for Nick's bandmates to take her home. In the book, great. They just mm-hmm. go home. They get a little bit lost.
Yeah.
They talk to a cab driver and get directions. And like, then Nora's dad is making them breakfast. In the movie, it does not go that way.
No. A lot more issues. Yeah.
A lot more issues. I remember a toilet and a piece of gum very viscerally when she's like stranded at, I think, Penn Station or something. Or the Port Authority, maybe. That sounds worse. So there's a lot more hijinks in the movie. But yeah, you're right. You need more dramatic effect. In the book, they only go to a few locations, really. And it's a lot of just conversations with people's exes and talking about one's exes.
Yeah.
And then some, obviously, the music that is the mm-hmm. undercurrent of their interactions.
And the movie had a phenomenal soundtrack. I remember that.
Truly, yeah. Very early 2000s.
Yes.
Indie like vibes.
Vampire Weekend. I think Belle and Sebastian might be in it. If they're not, they're mentioned in the book. Mm-hmm. The acknowledgements page is the playlist. It's so cute. And I know I picked up the book because Kat Dennings played Nora. Mm-hmm. And Kat Dennings was the main girl that I, in like middle school, in those really puberty years, that I was so interested in and just really liked watching her.
Yeah.
And it all started with the Hilary Duff film Raise Your Voice, which had a moment go viral on TikTok fairly recently, or like within the last handful of years.
Yeah. I think it was Sainey Smith does a amazing reenactment.
Oh.
Where she does every character of that, and it's incredible. But I forgot that Kat Dennings was in that.
Yeah, and she plays piano, because they're all at a music school, and I played piano, and I was a brunette, and she's very moody and angry, which I also resonated with in Raise Your Voice. And there's this scene at the end where she and her love interest like are yelling at each other and then start like violently making out, and that was crazy to me. Especially because I think I saw Raise Your Voice in third grade, and I love the way that it came into my life, because my dad and I were on a road trip, and I was sitting in the back seat with his laptop, and we forgot to bring a hairbrush for me and a DVD for me to watch on the trip to grandma's house.
The big two.
So he ran into a Walmart somewhere in West Virginia and grabs a hairbrush, and he's like, I know you like Hilary Duff. I found this random movie. So I was in the back seat with my dad driving, being like, what is this? And I'm obsessed.
Anything where someone goes to an art school and like literally finds their secret talent is something that kids love, because every kid wants to be, even like secretly, even if you don't actually want the attention, you like want to be the star, you know? Yeah. Want to be the kid who has something in you that other people are impressed by. Yeah. And I will say that I believe in 2006, the only perfume I've ever owned is With Love by Hilary Duff. Yeah. And I still have it. And I don't wear it because perfume makes me sneeze mostly. But if I smell it, I can just like can drop right into like 2006, getting ready to go out, putting on my weird business casual clothes to go to a bar. And it's like lip gloss, it's hair straighteners, it's all of it.
Oh, yeah.
But Kat Dennings was very much like a cool girl.
Yes.
And I think Nora definitely has that vibe of like, I will say in the book, it was very 2006, like internalized misogyny. Mm. Like we're going to call other girls who hook up with guys certain words. Mm-hmm. And then Nora is positioned as this like, oh, but she's not about that. She's about the music. Okay.
Exactly.
She's a cool girl. But also in the book, she like doesn't get a lot of attention or says she doesn't get a lot of attention from guys. And then you cast Kat Dennings, and it's like how they try and convince you every 10 years that Anne Hathaway isn't pretty. And I'm like, I can't do it.
I love that you bring up Anne Hathaway, because that is the definition of beauty to me specifically. Mm-hmm. And Kat Dennings is in the same vein. Yeah, it was this early 2000s thing of like, if you're a brunette, you're and just really an pale. Ugly ducking. Yeah.
I was very aware of, you know, my position as a like a young woman at that time. And obviously Kat Dennings is like stunningly beautiful to I think anyone, but she was also like sarcastic and snarky, and it's that idea of like, oh, if you're like pretty but you're kind of like one of the guys, then it's like it's less threatening somehow, or at least Hollywood can pitch it as something that, oh, maybe men wouldn't like. And you're like, it's Kat Dennings though.
<She's-> Exactly. Yeah. And I do think it's perfect casting. I think Michael Cera was the name like attached. He was the star power.
Oh yeah. Mid Arrested Development, I guess.
I think so. Yeah. And I think Nick in my rereading of it is just much like more like just like smoother than Michael Cera's reputation at the time and his character that he did in everything.
Yeah, he's a super romantic. Like he, and some of it is very much like an 18-year-old trying to be poetic.
Yeah. Right?
Which comes with the territory, I think, of that age, especially, you know, he's in a band, he's heartbroken. It's like very emo.
Yes.
In a believable way, you know. But he is a little more confident, whereas I think Nora's more in control of the situation.
Yeah.
I have to be honest, Erin, I didn't love this book.
Okay, that's fine. No, especially like coming around to 38 episodes, I am like, we say every book is required. And maybe that's because, and so like maybe I, as the host, can be brave and say like, actually, I don't think I liked this one. The book completely held up for me.
Yeah.
It is. I don't even know if it has to be required reading for me personally. Like, I don't know that my boyfriend needs to read this to better understand me. Mm-hmm. And it can still be my number one book, and I still love it. I want to hear why you don't like it. I'm excited to hear.
Yeah. So, I think the thing is, this book is so, for you, it's obviously a different experience, right? Because this book is so entwined with a particular place and time in your life. And if I had read this when I was 11, I would have ate this up.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea that one night can change your life and you can have this magical confluence of events, especially when you're going through something hard, like Nora is trying to figure out her future. Her ex shows up and like throws her emotionally, and Nick is going through the same thing. You know, they're both 18, 17 or 18. about to graduate high school. That is such a emotionally rich time in your life, an emotionally confusing time, and also trying to figure out like who you are as like a sexual being in the world now that you're like at this age, and also watching people around you experience those things in different ways, and like trying to figure out desire, and like both in the ways people desire you and in what you desire, is like such an intense thing. And I read this book as someone who is almost 40. And I feel like I was like their mom a little bit. I'm not a parent, but I'm reading this like from a distance. And I'm also thinking about myself at this age. And I get it. I get the appeal of a magical evening, even now to me as an adult who like, I like have most of the things that I want in life, or like at this age that I thought I wouldn't have. Like a loving partner and like a creative focus that's really fulfilling to me, and you know, a community of people that I really love and appreciate, and I feel like the most myself I've ever been. So when I think about myself at this age, this is obviously like, it's very different from my experience, but like the appeal of that perfect night that can change anything, that still strikes me, you know. Like sometimes I still fantasize about that, and it's and so like I get it, and I'm also like, I feel like the characters were not really well fleshed out. But you know, it's a quick book, it's one night, and I love like certain stories that are one night, like the whole like Before Sunrise
stage.
But I wanted more from these characters than like their one like their relationship issue.
That's true.
Like Nora had a little bit of that with trying to figure out what she's going to do after high school, like having, you know, turned down her college offer to go live on a kibbutz for a year. And but Nick was kind of like one dimensional. It was like, what's he going to do? Like, nobody really cares.
You know?
He's just trying to maybe get back with his ex or get over it. So I wanted more layers to these, because also I think young adult fiction can, it can often be a lot richer in those layers, because you have people who are at a jumping off point in their life. I mean, jumping off points and those sort of pivotal moments happen at a lot of stages in life, but especially when you're young and you're, everything feels so intense. So like the idea of not knowing what you're going to do in August and it's May is like life altering.
Yeah.
To me it was, you know. So I just wanted more, and I thought the end just dragged a little bit for me personally. Yeah, I wanted a little more depth to them, but I can also appreciate that it is a book that's contained to one night and to like internal monologues. So that's not what this book was trying to do, and that's okay too. Like I finished the book. I think the book accomplished what it wanted to. So like I wouldn't read it again, but I don't actually use Goodreads. I use Storygraph to like run my own reading, but I don't like, I don't share it with anyone, and I only rate books if I really like them because I want to improve a rating. And if books are just okay, but I still finished it and there wasn't anything like terribly objectionable, I just don't rate them.
And I'm like,
for me, that's like kinder. So I'm like, I wouldn't rate this book publicly. That's like my medium, my assessment.
No, that you're so right about, and I think this comes into like Kat Dennings and how I was approaching it, of like, I didn't really pay much attention to Nick. I think like I was so much more interested in Nora, both as like what I would be attracted to and what I would want to be. And I think like I, up until I was like halfway through my senior year of college, I spent years thinking like New York was the thing for me, and I was going to go to college in New York. I did a summer program there when I was 15, and so I think this really helped like build that foundation, and I love that idea of that one magic night. And then I didn't go to college in New York, and I got rejected, and that blew up my world. And I am so much happier now, and I know that like everything worked out right. Like New York is not the place for me at all, and I'm happy. Yeah, I'm happy for people who love it. It's not for me.
Oh yeah, I like to visit. We have an agreement in my marriage that we will not live in New York unless we become suddenly millionaires. because it's just too hard otherwise.
Yeah.
DC is like an easy city to live in.
Absolutely.
All its other flaws too, but
wait, is there a tornado coming through right now?
I don't see one. I think they're good.
I got a text from my mom saying tornado in Poolsville. And I was like, wait a minute.
I was confused when I moved here. So I'm, for those who don't know me, I am from the Midwest. And they have sirens in the town that go off when there's a tornado warning. So you go in the basement when you hear the siren. And when I moved here, there's no siren. When I moved here, I didn't have a smartphone. I was like, what do you do? They're like, I don't know. You listen to the radio. I'm like, who has a radio? And they test those sirens on the first Tuesday of the month at 10 a.m., at least where I was from. So you'd hear it every Tuesday, and then everyone does that Midwestern thing where they kind of look up. First Tuesday. But it's chill now. It rained a bit earlier, but it's fine.
Yeah. Nice. I was just realizing, like, you shouldn't be podcasting during a tornado.
You shouldn't be sitting in front of an open window inside of a tree during a tornado, Jenny. What is going on? With a lightning rod attached to your head. No, I'm safe. I am safe. Okay, I'm drinking a peach Wegmans sparkling beverage.
Wegmans. We don't have those here. Bear is inside a lamp. It's time to cause problems for her.
Good for her. She's like, podcasting is done. Yeah. Lamp time has started.
As long as she's not bothering my keyboard, I'm so happy for her. Bothering my keyboard, or she did unseat one of my calico critter babies. Oh. And for that, prison.
Wait, so on this reading, how many times would you say you've read this book?
Oh, seven, let's say.
That's a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've read any book seven times.
I haven't either. I think it's because it's so short and so slim, like it didn't take up a lot of backpack real estate. I think it just felt so intimate in talking about those internal monologues, and it felt... But in what you were talking about, how these characters aren't really fleshed out, this is something I was actually thinking about earlier today and hadn't made the connection. I was thinking a lot about like my first relationship. It's not their first relationship, but your first heartbreak, certainly. And for me, those were the same things. But I had this idea that I would get in a relationship, someone would finally like deem me worthy of a relationship, and I didn't realize it consciously, but I was like, then things will be fixed, you know, that's the end of the movie. And so it was such a freaky moment when I was in my first relationship and my depression came back, and I was like, this isn't supposed to happen.
Right.
I was told differently.
I'm finally seen by another person, right. And I am not solved.
Yeah, the book is over now. Like, this is supposed to be the easy stuff. And so I wondered, though, how much things, because this obviously is like, this is that, and very much everything else was. But like you said, I think those are often I don't think we see a lot of like romance books on this podcast. And I think there's a reason for that, you know?
Yeah, and I think, you know, having read a lot of contemporary romance, and I'm not an expert on the genre, of course, and there's many people, my sister in particular, who has read, like, probably 80 times more than I have, who could speak to it, but I think there's a lot more, I think, frankness in at least some of the books that I've read about the struggles people have in relationships, and there's... you know, the common thing in romance is the third act breakup, right?
Yes.
They come together. There's some sort of obstacle the couple has to overcome. You see this in, you know, movies too. But we can't just end the story after 100 pages. So they're together for a little while. So there's some sort of conflict that drives them apart. Mm-hmm. And then either briefly or for a while in the book, they are apart from each other. It's often based on miscommunication,
mm-hmm.
some sort of misunderstanding that happens, or a secret that gets revealed. Yeah. And then they come back together after they've worked that out. And I've seen a lot of in books recently that I've read where the third act breakup happens and one of them goes to therapy for 6 months. is like working on whatever shit that cause them to ruin their relationship. And then they like show back up and they're like, so I've been working on myself.
Wow.
And I'm like, bitch, it's been 6 months.
Yeah.
I need to be medicated for several years before. Yeah. But you know what I mean? In the interest of it being believable. Mm-hmm. And you know, 6 months of therapy, if you've never had therapy before, that
big.
Could do a lot of good. Mm-hmm. And I fully believe people don't need to be entirely healed in order to deserve love. But I've seen that come up a lot. And I enjoy it because I feel like it's realistic. Like,
yeah,
people do have to separate, work on themselves, apart from each other before they're ready for that thing. And like, hopefully the timing is right. But I mean, these kids are also like, they're 18. So.
Yeah.
Like, who knows? They probably don't end up together.
No.
Right? But they had this magical night, and they'll probably have a wonderful summer of, like, going to shows and making out on the street. And, like,
that's
there's something to that, too.
Yeah. I really hope. I think when the book ends, there's this tiny specter over your shoulder of like, well, what's gonna happen next? And as an adult, I'm like, these two should not be together. Like, any, you probably shouldn't be with the person that you're with at 18, you know, when you're 30, 40, 50.
Most
that's
people should not.
Yeah, but I hope they have like a really nice summer, and then I hope they're like, no one's fault, we're just going different places. And I feel like Nora at least has the smarts to be like, we don't need to try to keep this long distance and things like that. But I don't know for certain.
But she also says at the end, I'll never break your heart. I'm like, don't do that. Don't say that.
Don't say that.
Don't say that. Like, say I will never be intentionally cruel to you.
Yeah.
That's the less romantic.
Yeah. I'll never break your heart on purpose, we hope. You know?
Right. But no one can guarantee that, you know?
But I think that's the age. It feels like an age of absolutes, maybe.
Oh, for sure. I didn't date at 18. So
no. Actually, technically I did for like a week, and then I turned 19, you know?
Like, you're like, thank God that's over.
Exactly. Ugh.
What does your shirt say, by the way?
Oh, it says, age is just a number, and mine is unlisted.
It's in like Comic Sans, and it has a
phone book.
That's lovely.
Yeah, my boyfriend found it at a thrift store a couple weeks ago, and it's near the top of the rotation.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And it's a good, it's not too thick, but it's light, you know?
It's a hang shirt.
Yeah.
It's a podcast shirt now.
I think I did wear it the last episode. Oops.
It's not a visual medium. Wear whatever you want.
Yeah. At least I'm wearing something, you know? I thought the language, especially from Nick's perspective, because he is a writer, was very beautiful. But I also acknowledge that I think it's very beautiful to its audience. Like, the song lyrics, not great. Just not great.
No. I'm like, if we heard this to a tune, to a riff, perhaps it would resonate. And yeah, it's very much emo guy trying to be a poet, and he name checks like the title. There's that moment with the like, Leonardo DiCaprio pointing at the screen, the title, and it playlist, and you know, there's a lot of music metaphors about that. And but I'm also like, he's an 18-year-old, you know, he's trying to fall in love again, so I'll allow it. I wasn't swooning over it.
Yeah. I think maybe the only moment I was really swooning was when they're at the drag show and he offers her a hand and they start dancing. I think that was something, at least for me particularly, that felt cute.
And then they almost do it in a bathroom.
In an ice room.
An ice room. Okay.
Oh, no, a bathroom and then an ice room. You're right
and
on both.
An ice room, yeah. The ice room. So that was at a Marriott that they like just walk into. My parents met at a Marriott.
Wow.
In a walk-in freezer. That is a true story. They were both working there. So I was reading that and I was like, oh, it's mom and dad.
Yeah.
That was this. Theirs was the scene in the book is in a, like the ice machine room.
Mm-hmm.
They met in a walk-in freezer and in the early 70s, my mom was wearing a freezer coat and my father, who was 19, and it was the 70s, so she had on a very short skirt. He said, looks like you're not wearing anything under that coat. That was his And that worked, Erin, and it's why I'm alive, and I'm I think about it every day. Don't do that at work.
No, not at work. Not at work. But that's the log line, sort of, is, would you mind being my girlfriend for the next 5 minutes?
Right, because he sees his ex with a new guy.
Yeah.
Very rom-com. Let's pretend a date to make our exes jealous. Uh-oh. We fell for each other for real.
Oopsie.
There was a lot, too, for anyone reading this with a contemporary eye. There's a lot of very 2006 language in this book in regards to, like, sexuality, too. There's a lot of, like, Nora immediately... She's just constantly speculating whether Nick is gay. Because he's in a queer band. I found that jarring from, like, me now, but... Mm-hmm. I also lived through this time, and so I'm like, this is very true to how people talked, at least how straight people talked about sexuality in that time, and I'm glad that we've, at least cool people, have strayed away from that type of thing, but just for people to be aware of that thing. But I'm like, oh yeah, looking at when this book came out, that's exactly, there's just a lot of casual homophobia and, like, misogyny in the way people talked to each other, which is good that some of us outgrew that.
Yeah. We've talked about Hillary Duff with that commercial of, like, don't say gay or whatever. But I feel like that's where the bar was, you know?
Yeah.
Of don't use gay as a derogatory term.
Yeah, I was in college when this book came out, and, like, the discourse was just, like, I will say, with straight people. With, like, straight people who thought that they were liberal. We've come a ways as a society, and we still have places to go.
So much.
Happy Pride, everybody.
Happy Pride!
Happy Pride. Yes. We can still do better. Society!
Yeah. It was very cool for what it was. It was a girl who is not like other girls, unfortunately. She is rendered specifically in her contrast to the party girls, to Caroline, to Triss. They never use the dreaded phrase, but that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other girls are around, and it shows because they're groupies and they want to hook up with guys. But Nora's all about the music. She's also the child of a wealthy record executive and is like gonna take over her uncle's club in a year maybe, and is, I'm like, I hate the term pick me girl because I think it's just rooted in like deep misogyny of women in general, but it is like that archetype of the girl who's like, she's not like other girls. She's here for the real reasons, but more importantly, she's also hot.
Yes.
And doesn't really know it. So,
yes.
It can still be the girl who gets the guy.
Yeah.
Which, unfortunately, is like sometimes still the undercurrent. But she's also a good friend, actually, to Caroline.
Yeah.
She looks out for her, makes sure she gets home safe. I've been Caroline. I've been Nora.
So. Yeah.
It's good to have friends looking out for you. And I think she finds compassion for Triss in the end, too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Which is important because Triss could have just been a one-dimensional evil ex and is just sort of like someone who's kind of just doing what she wants to do and understands that she's 18 and people are going to go their separate ways. So why pretend something doesn't go about it in a good way, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I did not remember Triss maybe at all, I think, and Tal, Nora's ex, even less. But I think she was something that I was pleasantly surprised by in this rereading. I think especially because she does have that frankness. Like you said, she knows what she wants. She has such a clear head about things. And I think Nora comes to appreciate, maybe not necessarily that aspect, but like that this is a person who's going to go after the things that she wants. And, you know, did the you know, lesser of two unkind things in order to serve, like, to give Nick, you know, a way to someone who likes him a lot better than she is interested in doing.
Yeah, like, she encounters him a few times, but the way she, like, she's not jealous.
No.
She's more curious, and she wants Nick to move on because he's hung up on her, and she's like, there's no chance, he needs to know that, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, like she also cheated on Nick a lot, but she she didn't use that as, you know, the ammo to break up with him. She was just like, this isn't going to work out. Because she knew that he loved her. He said that, I love you. And she's like, I don't feel that way. So she immediately breaks it off. And I'm like, that's pretty mature.
Yeah.
For an 18-year-old to be like, oh, you feel a lot more than I do. So, yeah, I haven't been a great girlfriend to you, but I'm just going to. We're going to end this now before it's like worse. So I don't, is Triss the hero? No, but who is the hero of this book, do you think?
I mean, I think what Nick and Nora would say is the hero is Salvatore the Jacket.
Salvatore the Jacket. And maybe I do. The real jackets were the Salvatores we knew along the way, Aaron.
I think this heavily influenced my sense of humor. I think maybe in the ways that it has that snippiness that, like, a lot did at the time. Like, Buffy certainly did, and that's such a touchstone for me. I think maybe Triss is the most, like, adult, and so I think that is kind of the hero here, or the closest we get. Yeah.
She's also the most, like, sexually coded in the book, so... She's described as like her power coming from her sexuality, you know, in the ways that she's able to just get guys and like kind of show up anywhere and she can get in the door places. But she's like, she, like you said, she knows what she wants and she's not afraid to also say it, which is hard, I think, at this age. I did, one thing I wrote down at the beginning was I thought it, when like they're going over their first impressions of each other, Nick remarks that Nora's wearing a flannel shirt, and that's like one of the other things that distinguishes her from the other girls. Is she's
it comes up multiple times. Yeah,
it's like, oh, she's not cool, she wears flannel. And he says that it's the only fashion from the last 50 years that hasn't come back yet, and I'm like, oh, he just has to wait like 3 years and then that it's cool again, you know.
I know, A, I was reading this book in seventh grade, and B, I was wearing a flannel in my yearbook photo that year. I know for a fact.
After you read this book, or before?
I don't know, because I think maybe I was reading it as it was coming back, because I had a lot of flannels in high school. I just got rid of my last one, because I was like, you haven't worn this in 3 years. That it's very soft cannot be a reason to keep it anymore.
And it's flannels have come back several times since 2006, so... I will say it's a bold thing to put in print when a book takes like 2 years to come out to say this trend is not there. Or maybe they caused it. Maybe they caused it to come back. Maybe that's the real story of this book. Flannel shirts.
I don't even know if she's wearing one on the cover. I mean, she's wearing a scoop neck, which...
Who wasn't?
I know. And I would be lying if I wasn't thankful for it as a young person. I'd be lying.
Do you remember at Target for years at that time they had scoop necks or the V, and it had a tiny, tiny pocket?
Yeah, a frocket. Yeah.
Yes. It's like a tiny pocket right on the tit, and that was like for years you could get that t-shirt for $8.
Yeah.
Oh, and it was much longer than it had to be, too.
Such a
long shirt.
All the way over my butt, and I took comfort in that for some reason.
Yeah,
so you're to be held. Yeah,
leggings too. So
no, I was wearing thick corduroy jeans.
Ooh.
To go with my flannels. Yeah,
Real pick me girl over here.
Well, I definitely found comfort in being different.
I did too.
Yeah,
When I say like 2006 me, I think would have appreciated this book too and liked the movie, because I was definitely the person who was like, I go to shows.
Yeah.
I don't go to frat parties. I go to concerts and I go by myself because everyone else isn't like cool, you know, or like just that youthful urge to define yourself by your interests that aren't the same as all of your peers.
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of people that is music, or it's getting really into film and obscure films and art house films. And I was the music person. So very much like, and snobby about that.
Too, yeah.
In a way that Nora is. So I was like, maybe that's part of why
Yeah.
I found some of her parts irritating because, you know, you spot it, you got it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was something interesting revisiting it is like, I like music, but I was not a music kid. I was a film and television person and I still am. So I was like, why did this resonate so much with me? Like, because it is so about that. I was really surprised, especially like I'm a person who even like poetry I respect, I don't really get. It's like, it's not really for me. And I think like Nick's lyric writing is obviously it's you know, meant to be poetry set to music. So I don't know. That's something, that's a little question I still have for myself of like, what was that about?
It's that scoop neck, Erin. It's a scoop neck of it all, I think. It's Kat Dennings. How are you not drawn in?
Yeah, it, and there's like a straight line between Eliza Dushku in Buffy to Kat Dennings. It's just a straight direct line.
Is it straight, Erin? Would we call it straight?
It's the wiggliest line you've ever seen.
But what a beautiful line. Yeah.
The limpest wristed line.
I mean, I love a snarky gal. I do. I love it. So, Kat, wherever you are, I think she's married to Andrew WK, which is also amazing. Not that we define people by their partners, but what a pairing, you know? Mm-hmm. And has gone on to act in many fine films.
Yeah, she was in a movie when I was in high school that I found online and was called Daydream Nation, and it was about her having an affair with her English teacher, which was very bad. But they also were like, this is bad, don't do this.
Don't do it.
This guy is bad. Yeah. And so I appreciated that.
It was an after school special.
It was very skinny scarves and Justin Bieber swoopy hair, and you know, it was very that.
What a time. It's like when I watch Gossip Girl, old Gossip Girl episodes. I mean, they're all old now. But just the number of, I would say, layered tops, and also the rapid cell phone design that happens within a few years is just, it's just jarring to me. And I love it. I love it. I was there. I remember it. And I enjoy visiting it sometimes. But I also love the future. So there you go. In case anyone was curious. Jenny Cavallaro loves and occasionally looking at someone wearing a peplum top.
You should put that on a sweatshirt. Jenny Cavallaro loves the future. Yeah, I'm flipping through my notes and I think it's a lot of just like, I really like that line. That was, I don't know if it's pretty now, but I thought it was pretty then.
I would be interested in watching the movie again now, having just read the book, and more of the movie came back to me because I didn't remember a lot, but I remember liking Caroline like the most in the movie. I'm like, what a surprise. I liked the drunk girl as a former drunk person myself.
Yeah. But all of the reasons why I liked Nora made so much sense.
Yeah. So maybe I should watch it and see if it holds up. It's definitely a time capsule of a particular time, which is fun to visit. So, and Michael Cera, you know, I watched Scott Pilgrim like a couple months ago. Because we were watching the animated series too, which was great. Mm-hmm. And I loved how different it was.
Yeah, but I saw that movie in theaters with friends. I had a poster. I had a t-shirt. I wasn't even that into it. I just had a lot of it. I remember really loving the passage about I want to hold your hand across the universe came out around the same time. And that was a movie I really loved. And I think that really did set some of my, that like really was a corner stone aspect of how I understood love, and I think was like at the time was very insightful and edifying to me.
Yeah, you just want someone you can hold hands with. There was a line in Girls, which the more I revisit Girls, the more I think it was just a genius show. And there's a line where Hannah shows up to what's his name, Adam's doorstep. Yeah. It's Adam Driver, and she's like, she makes some plea to him about, because they're kind of in a situationship, and he's sleeping with other people, and she says something like, I don't want you to be my boyfriend, I just want you to like hang out with me every day and only sleep with me or something. And I'm like, that's all anyone
wants. It's just someone to be there, absolutely. And yeah. I think that's something that feels really rare when you're young, is that someone who can like sort of sit and let it happen. And I think that's something that Nick and Nora kind of find in each other. And I also wanted to mention Nick and Nora, when I read the book when I was younger, my dad was like, oh, from The Thin Man, for like their names. And I didn't get it then. Huge Thin Man fan now of those films.
I only know The Thin Man because of crossword puzzles, because the New York Times loves to bring up Asta the dog as a clue.
Yeah.
They'll be like The Thin Man dog, and that comes up like quarterly.
It makes sense. Yeah, like a good word for a crossword.
I'm telling you, ants are coming up a lot in crosswords lately, like the tiny workers, you know. Anyway, yeah. This has been Crossword Talk with Aaron and Jenny, but I have never seen The Thin Man. Does it mirror the story at all, or did they just take the names?
No, it's like madcap husband and wife solve crime. Ooh, in the 30s. That. Yeah, it's Dashiell Hammett. It's okay. Very cute. It's like a 7-movie series, and I have only seen, I think, the first three. But it's very, like, it's very screwball comedy with a murder in it. And it's William Powell and Myrna Loy, who are, I just love them. I am a big classic Hollywood person, and yeah, it's just like fun and cute and very sassy, and His Girl Friday and bringing a baby and stuff. Yeah,
I love both of those. And It Happened One Night.
Also, Claudette Colbert. Oh yeah, my last highlight was just, there is no ending here. It's an infinite playlist.
Well said, Aaron. Well said. Listen to some Vampire Weekend or something. And
yeah.
Smoke a clove cigarette. They don't sell those anymore.
They don't?
No. Wow. I haven't probably bought them since 2008, and which is when they became illegal in the United States. So it's better this way. Who needs a goth cigarette, you know? Not me.
I mean, that's the beautiful thing about vapes, is they're for everyone. You know? Bringing nicotine back. Yeah.
Your sweatshirts would say, Aaron Bowles, vapes, they're for everyone.
Yeah. Man, remember when that was the bulk of the news? Vapes are blowing up.
Yeah. They still are somewhere. We're just not hearing about it.
Yeah.
They blew up all the clowns that were coming out of the woods.
It was so close to a spit take.
It really held it together well. Also, I understand how time zones work, but I think it's creepy that it's light out where you are and it's dark outside my window.
I mean, it's setting. It's getting there. But yeah, it's. I mean, LA is starting to really be its postcard self.
I should go eat some Tres Leches.
I should. I think we both said, not required reading.
Yeah, not required. However, for a certain time and place. Mm-hmm. Sure. That's my assessment. Sure.
Yeah. And I think it makes a lot of sense that that this was my book, in that I, like Nora, I really took pride in being different. And so that no one else read it, no one else saw the movie. It was for indie. It was the year before hipster, as an identity that had not yet been gross and hated was about to happen. And that was something that I was really 9/10 of the way into, you know, in terms of passions.
Yeah, I could see. I think it would be cool to see a modern adaptation of this story.
For a young writer, it was so revolutionary to have two authors and to switch off like that. That was huge.
I do like when authors do that and when they pull it off. And they have very distinct voices in this book. And I went back and forth between, with being oh, I don't like this character. Oh, no, I like this one. I don't like this one. You know, someone that is just, angsty teen stuff that I'm just, that I don't have the stamina for anymore. And that's okay.
Yeah, okay. That's okay.
It's
yeah,
good, there, actually. It's good there to not been... relate to this book.
There have been a fair number of books where it's where I've had the same experience, where it was I'm really glad you have this. I felt really anxious reading this, or you know,
concerned about your choices, babe. Mm-hmm. Really, really worried.
Yeah. Honestly. Like you said, that's beautiful and good and needed.
It means we've grown since 2006, which
I would hope so.
What more could we hope for?
Yeah. The people born in 2006 can vote now. So
Wait, what?
Right? That's the math.
Oh, wow. And I like when I said I would love a modern adaptation of this, I'm like, 2008. Oh, yeah, that's not modern. That's not.
Yeah.
Woof. Okay. I'm going to put on some eye cream and make a mess. Yeah. It's fine. I feel good.
Yeah.
I'm glad I read it. It was, yeah, it's an easy read. So. Mm-hmm.
Certainly.
Get it from your local library. Maybe they'll have an original edition. Probably not.
Yeah. But. I asked for the hardback copy, I think when I was in high school, for Christmas, because my edition had fallen apart so badly.
I love that, though. I love a well-read book.
You know?
It's good. And I love your cat. I love this bear. Bear, you say?
Hello?
That is powerful.
I know. She...
I'm not mad I read it. Sometimes I'm mad. Good. I like make myself finish books, which I don't encourage others to do if they're reading for pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
But especially, I buy a lot of books. So if I bought a book, I'm like, I'm going to finish
it.
You know? Or I want to know if it gets better. And then books just sometimes don't. And I'm like, this book is for someone. It's not for me. But also, it made me angry.
Spent hours no! on it.
You know? Not this book. I mean... But that's showbiz, baby, you know?
It is. So, yeah. Thank you for coming on again, doing Dealer's Choice. I feel like I should have, like casino sounds going on, you know, when I say that.
Yeah, it was lovely, and it's just, like, nice to hang out with you for an hour and change. That's lovely.
You too. Is there anything you'd like to plug on our way out?
Oh, great. No.
Okay.
No.
Sounds good.
You can follow me on Instagram at Jenny and the Librarians. And if you live in DC or the area, I run a monthly sober show at a sober bar called Seltzer. We're a Seltzer comedy show on Instagram. We do it once a month. You don't have to be sober to come. You just have to buy a ticket and hang out. And it's super fun and joyful, and they have really good food. So that's my plug. Eat good food.
I love that. Go read fun books. Vape. Yeah. Share a vape with your teen. There we go.
What a message. What a message.
That's where we end it. Yeah.
Share a vape with your teen.
Hey there. Thanks for listening. Sorry, I'm eating breakfast, so my mouth sounds might be a little weird. This episode had a lot of mouth sounds. Okay, I'm aware. I'm working on it. My bad. Next week, we're doing the Gruffalo. You can find me everywhere at Erin R. Bowles. The R stands for Rush Margins, which is a town in Wicked. Oh, I hope you can hear that burp.